Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now. With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Generations Riviera Maya Resort and do your deal at cheapcaribbean.com.
Talking to Death is released every Friday and brought to you absolutely free. But if you want ad-free listening and exclusive bonuses, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com or on Apple Podcasts.
Talking to Death is a production of Tenderfoot TV and iHeart Podcasts. Listener discretion is advised.
All right, I'm rolling now. My bad. Oops.
Oopsie. Did you press record?
I did.
Good.
We're not doing video, right? No video?
No, but I see you. Yep. On Zoom.
I'm here.
Did you get a haircut?
I did not, no.
It looks healthy today. I mean, it always looks pretty healthy, but...
It's getting super long.
Put the leave-in conditioner in there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Every day.
It's amazing what that will do.
I'm just sensitive, you know? My scalp's super sensitive.
It's helping the dryness of your scalp. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I would recommend.
Well, now I just throw Vaseline in there. That fixes everything.
What are the things people really use Vaseline for? Why does my mind immediately go to something perverted or something? Like, is that a joke?
No, I mean, it's like for burn victims, right?
Is it for like cuts?
I think it's not
chapstick. So I mean, you could probably put it on your lips, but that's not.
Dylan's saying that some people eat Vaseline. I don't believe that.
What are you talking about? Is that some conspiracy? Is that like a Tide Pod thing? Are the TikTok kids doing that now? Eating Vaseline?
Oh, it's just April Fool's Day. So.
Oh yeah.
Like, okay. Try this new flavor of ice cream, and it's Vaseline.
God, that would suck. But what if you liked it? And you're like, damn. It
might be good.
Thanks. Anyways, we're getting off track a little bit. Welcome back to Talking to Death. Today's guest, I'm super pumped about. This guy is definitively the OG of podcasting, in my opinion. I made Up and Vanished in 2016, which was a long time ago now. And the podcast space was not what it is today, right? Changed a lot. Now there's a billion shows and there's a lot of new content creators, and it's a very competitive space, and there's a lot of good stuff out there. When I first made Up and Vanished and we made our first dollar, my business partner Donald and I were looking for an office space for me. And there's a building called Ponce City Market in Atlanta. And one of the main reasons I actually ended up going there was because there was a company called How Stuff Works there, which their biggest show was called Stuff You Should Know. And I was just thinking the silly thought of, well, I mean, if these podcast people who are the best in the game are in this building, then maybe we should be too. And then you fast forward all these years later, I ended up actually meeting a lot of these guys at How Stuff Works, which became iHeart. And I've known these guys ever since. And I've learned a lot from this person. His name is Chuck Bryant. And if you listen to podcasts, I feel like you should already know who this guy is. His podcast, Stuff You Should Know. I mean, I remember, Mike, you telling me about this show a long time ago when I told you I was making a podcast. Like, just, I mean, almost 7, 8 years ago.
Yeah, I've seen him live before I even worked in podcasts. And I think Chuck has one of the most healing laughs I've ever heard. His laugh just kills me. It's amazing.
He does.
So wholesome.
They have a really fun show. They're smart people. They research really interesting topics, and they deliver it in a no-bullshit way that is easy to digest and even fun for the whole family to listen to, and they're honestly just funny as hell. So he's one half of Stuff You Should Know. So I talked to him a lot about his career, this podcast space in general and how far we've both come and how much has changed in the podcast landscape and just the entertainment content space since the time I first met him, which would have been, 2017. Super down-to-earth dude. We recorded this in the iHeart studio in Atlanta. And it was a fun conversation. I'm excited for you guys to learn a little bit more about Chuck Bryant. He's got a lot of insight on kind of everything. If there's one person who knows the most stuff, it's got to be this guy. If not, it's his co-host, Josh Clark.
They have to be amazing trivia partners, right?
Yeah, this guy would whoop your ass in trivia. Well, we don't know anything about anything, so let's go ahead and pivot to Chuck Bryant, who knows the most stuff there is to know from his podcast, Stuff You Should Know. So without further ado, today's guest is Chuck Bryant. Hope you enjoy it.
Fair warning.
Yeah.
I'm missing, I have three implants, teeth, and one of them is in the process of getting redone. So
your tooth might fall?
I have a, no, it's out. It's a, it's a front tooth out that you used to, you saw it back in the day.
Yeah.
It's getting redone now because my bone, I have bone loss. Long story. Wow. But I just don't want you to be alarmed if Hillbilly Chuck comes out.
I kind of like super it. You got to pull that out sometimes if you like get in a bar fight.
Yeah, it's, you know, unfortunately the implant is a permanent, well, what's supposed to be permanent. But the first time I had it done, I was very self-conscious and had a flipper, which is basically a retainer with a little tooth on the front.
Yeah.
So it just pops in.
Uh-huh.
But then the other two, I was like, fuck it. And then this one happened and my wife's like, you're going to get a flipper? I was like, nah, I don't care.
So are you just gonna leave it or are you gonna put a new one in there?
Well, no, it's just like an 8-month process.
Is it really?
Yeah, they got to put, you'd probably like this, they put cadaver bone.
Really?
That takes 4 months to become part of you, and then they put the implant in that, they do a bone graft, and then they put the implant in, and then that has to become part of your jaw for 4 months. So it's an 8-month process.
So they really like blend it to,
yeah, like it literally
that
becomes
newer though, right? I guess
your,
that's a more permanent way to do it.
Or I mean, they always new like, no, I mean they used to have like choppers you could just pop in and out.
Oh, they just sewed that thing in there.
Yeah, now it's like literally cadaver bone that they put in there that becomes like part of your jaw, your skull.
Sounds expensive.
Yeah.
If you don't like, if you're interested,
it's not cheap.
It can't be. Yeah.
No,
that's a cosmetic thing.
I don't
right?
know, but it's supposed to be permanent. And Mike Rowe, the Mike Rowe,
yeah,
of whatever,
we, absolutely, all that. Yeah.
I did a book. When you host someone for their, or not host, but like you moderate their book signing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
When he came through town, I moderated his book event or whatever.
That sounds fun.
And he said, Chuck, let me tell you something. 100 years after you die, the only thing in your coffin will be that implant.
You're like, wow.
I was like, all right, that's kind of cool.
Don't your teeth stay forever?
Oh, you mean like if they dug up
you withered away, your bones and your teeth would be there, right?
You would know, right?
Not really.
I mean, this
you would know. You know all this stuff.
No, now we're in a contest. I'm like, well, no, you know this stuff.
Well, I mean, actually, I was thinking about it. Like, how long ago when you first started making podcasts?
Stuff You Should Know is in our 16th year.
That's so long ago.
So 2008.
So you've really seen it from a perspective that very few people can see it, I feel like.
Well, I mean, I was just telling Dylan here, you know, like people write in all the time and, you know, I'm sure you get these emails like, hey, how do you make your podcast really big and make money on it?
Right.
And I always tell people now, it's like, well, get a time machine is the first step.
Right.
And go back 15 years. I was like, I have no advice. I wouldn't know how to get one popular today.
I mean, I'm totally with you. It's a different landscape.
Yeah.
And
but you've been around for a long time too, though, now.
Yeah, but still, like, you know, when I came into the podcast space, you still are. Like, you were the OG podcaster who had figured it out already. And then there were, like, it felt like there was a new wave of podcasts for the first time.
Right.
Or something. Or, like, a new chapter.
Yeah, yeah.
Beginning, right? And if you look back on it, so it made me think you've been doing Stuff You Should Know for 16 years?
Yeah.
Do you know the most stuff?
No, there's no way. I mean, I'm pretty good on a trivia team.
Right. You'd crush.
But also pain. There's a lot of this whenever I play trivia. Oh, shit, man. I knew that. What was that?
That thing from that one time.
We did a thing on that. Oh, I can't remember.
Right.
So I can be a very frustrating trivia partner.
That was episode 2000 and what was it?
Yeah, I mean, the brain can only hold so much. So it's kind of one in, one out at this point.
When I first started making podcasts, I made Up and Vanish season one, and I started partnering with my now business partner, Donald Albright, and we were looking for an office space. And I went to Pont City Market and went to Industrious upstairs, and we decided to rent like a little kind of cubicle thing, right? And
I remember that.
Officially pay for a spot where I would just be there by myself editing the show. Uh-huh. And I remember one of the main reasons I actually decided to go there, outside of Pont City Market being cool, right? And also, I'm pretty sure it was out of our budget at that point anyways, but we just did it anyway. But How Stuff Works was there. Uh-huh. And I was aware of your podcast. And it was this little part of me that was like, hey, like if they're here.
Oh, right. So
not that like there was any plans with that. It was just kind of like, maybe that's the correct thing. But I mean, I came to find out that because I was there, we were there, I ended up meeting Apple, Steve Wilson for the first time.
Yeah, I remember Steve.
Then I met Jason.
Uh-huh.
Then I met you. I met Matt Frederick.
I met
the whole iHeart team, and we still work with you guys.
I know.
Ever since then. And
isn't it funny how...
Yeah, it was just a simple thing.
Yeah, like these not insignificant decisions, but just sort of like, I guess let's rent a place there. Like your life took a completely different direction.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
Going on 16 years... Obviously, it's your job. It's a career.
Yeah.
And you've built this foundation. You have a routine. You have a tremendous fan base. And it's amazing how just tight-knit they are and how dedicated they've been for so long. As a human and creator, what continues to drive you at this point?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question, man, because Matt and I were talking before about just like, I don't think I've ever had a job half this long. Right. In my life. Yeah. You know, I don't think I ever did a job for 8 years in a row.
I didn't.
And now all of a sudden, we're in year 16 or whatever. And then I guess 17 years with a company because we were around for a little bit before the show started. And that's a legit question to be like, especially when it's, you know, Stuff You Should Know is so locked in. Like you get to do different stuff with each new story and each new case and like, and obviously doing stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Stuff You Should Know is, I think one of the reasons we've had success is we really just locked in the format and realized like when you're that kind of show, people don't want it different.
Mm-hmm.
Like they want you to do the exact same thing. And to do that twice a week for 16 years is admittedly like a lot.
Yeah.
But I'm not tired of it yet. You know,
yeah.
There are weeks here and there, of course, where I'm like, oh God, you know, I got to research another thing because it's kind of like school in a way.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's still a job, right?
Yeah.
You're
exactly.
Working, right? Yeah.
But the actual sitting down with Josh and Jerry is like, that's always great.
Yeah.
That's never like, oh, that part's a drag.
Yeah.
It's kind of the research gets a little old here and there. And I'm also starting to think about legacy at this point, like, you know, retiring one day and sort
you're
of
not that old,
saying
bro.
Like, I've just turned 53, but
good.
No, I mean, it's not like I'm old and feeble and can't do it anymore. It's just more like, well, like, what's the shelf life on any show?
Sure.
But 20 years, 25 years, like.
Is there even a blueprint for us to know that?
No, but I mean.
Part of that?
I guess so. Maybe
if someone was trying to do some research and development to figure out the answer to that problem, wouldn't they probably look at your podcast to see?
Maybe like how long can you? But you know, Radiolab's been around forever, uh-huh. And 99% Invisible, and there's a lot of those sort of OG shows that are still going. You know,
so what's a legacy to you? Is that important? That you know, if you die tomorrow, that you left some sort of legacy, and what does that mean to you?
Yeah, like I never thought about that kind of shit until the last couple of years. Honestly, when we saw you guys at the Ambies, when we won the Governor's Award, that's when I first started kind of thinking of like, oh, wait a minute, like I'm going to leave this job at some point and leave the earth at some point. And this stuff is going to be out there kind of forever, probably.
Yeah.
Unless they, you know, feel like the internet got full one day and they have to scrub stuff.
Take a long time to delete all your shit.
And like, yeah, I started thinking a little more about like what in 100 years into the future,
yeah,
somebody might be listening to this stuff and learning, and like, it feels like really, really great.
Yeah.
I just try not to overthink that stuff.
So you kind of just, I guess maybe like practically viewed it that way for the first time in a real way.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's a positive thing, right? It's kind of like a reflection on, hey, like this body of work that you,
yeah,
that extends, sure, beyond your human life in some way, right?
Yeah. And we're not like out the door or anything, but you know, if we were like professional football players, you know, we'd be in the last stages of our career.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, athletes get to that point where they're like, hey, I'm not saying I'm retiring next year, but I'm in the last third.
Yeah.
You know, well, we're not going to go for 40 years.
I mean, maybe we have like the dopest medical advancements in the next like 20 right. years. Maybe we don't even want to sign up. Then maybe we're just tired of this shit. And we're like, that's cool. Let the next generation have it.
Sure.
I'm ready to go.
Because I'm sure someone else would. They would replace us,
yeah,
one day when we leave.
Yeah.
Because like we don't own that show.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sure, you know, there might be a brief ceremony and then they would hand the keys over to some younger, you know, Josh and Chucks.
Do you think like in 200 years there'll be like a second reboot of Stuff You Should Know?
I mean,
that's based off the television version of it now that happened after you died.
Oh geez, I mean, I don't imagine there would ever be any good reason for them to stop making it with other people, even.
Yeah,
you know, the IP is so gold.
It's good.
Yeah,
it's good.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
You clearly are a curious person.
Yeah.
Enough to, you know, make a whole podcast for 16 years called Stuff You Should Know. You know, I think there's different versions of curiosity. Through me, like, making podcasts, especially true crime stuff,
yeah,
it's really only like made my curiosity grow,
yeah,
with like how people tick, or
sure,
why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling, and why this person's acting this way.
Yeah, you have a real like psychological insight and curiosity probably with the stuff you do.
Kind of, yeah.
Getting to talk to real people, and you know, that's so not what I do. So I get jealous a lot of times.
But I rely on people like you to do the stuff, like tell me what I don't know, because I can't figure it out, I guess.
You got it so good, man, because you get to do this.
I also
no,
love
you got
how
it so good.
Everyone always does this.
Yeah.
It's funny because like I could easily look at what you're doing. I'm like, man, like that sounds so nice.
Yeah.
Just to sit there twice a week,
right,
and do the same thing.
Yeah.
Are you telling me that like I could know what I'm doing next week? That's crazy. Right.
But the also excitement the of right. what you do, and like,
sure.
And especially, you know, I've heard, you know, some stuff about what's coming, and I'm not sure what people know yet, but
yeah, I mean,
it
yeah,
sounds
it,
super.
This will be out, so yeah.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that's crazy and amazing.
It is crazy, but it's kind of, yeah, like, I don't know. I took a weird risk this time.
Yeah.
I felt like I had to.
Uh-huh.
Like, I felt like I owed it to myself.
Oh, really?
I'd actually be curious about your perspective on this because you have a more objective viewpoint than I would.
Yeah.
Like when I came into the scene as a podcaster and like look at true crime podcasts back then, let's talk about 2016, right?
Yeah.
Post Serial, but like before a lot of stuff.
Oh, for sure.
And I feel like I was one of the first people who wasn't like the qualified individual traditionally to go do like a investigative show like that. And
it kind of
sparked that conversation a little bit. And now that's
why it worked,
so normal. Yeah. Absolutely. But now it's so normalized. And that kind of happened under my nose and around me. I just looked up one day and I was like, oh, that's acceptable now.
Yeah.
Oh, oops.
I mean, that took some guts, man, to be like, you know, I've never done anything like this. Like, I'm not qualified to go out and investigate crime.
Yeah.
But then you find yourself doing it and then you're good at it. And then you're good at relating that to people.
Yeah.
So like, sure, you were qualified. You just didn't know it.
And you're right. And also, thank you for that. This would be nearly 8 years later now, which is a long time as well.
Oh, totally.
I felt like I wanted to go, like, as a creative person and as like, if I'm going to do this again, my mindset's going to be, I want to put myself in the same level of uncomfortability that I was when I first started.
Yeah.
Because I already know I can do what I know how to do.
Right.
What's the new bar for me?
Yeah.
As someone who like was there a long time ago.
Yeah.
Do I still give a shit? Am I still pushing it for myself?
Uh-huh.
And maybe that is, you know, good for other people too.
Oh, totally. And that's almost like, you just got to be careful. You can't, you know, like the, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of artists, whether it's like Andy Kaufman or whoever, that just kept pushing their own bar to get either weirder or do more like, in your case, sort of intimidating, potentially dangerous things. I don't know, man. I worry sometimes when I hear about what's going on with you.
You're like,
what's next?
And I mean, no one worries as much as my mom does, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, sure. I bet.
You know, I had to like reassure her. I was like, look, like, I'm on the phone with you right now. Like, this already happened. So like, that's over now.
Yeah.
I did make it out.
Right.
But for as like crazy as some of the risks I've taken are in like the true crime space, like knocking on some bad guy's door, all those things have been super meticulously calculated.
Yeah.
And like only done under that where like I have the advantage.
Uh-huh.
You don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And then I'm off to safety. Now there might be repercussions from that.
Right.
But I know I've played out all the scenarios. I'm not living on the edge because that would be, I couldn't function that way really.
Yeah. But there's a little bit of confidence in you knowing who they are, but they don't know who you are, kind of thing?
Yeah, like, for example, in the latest Up and Vanish season, I catfished this guy, and he met me at a bar. I mean, it's scary because the guy, I know he's dangerous. He has weapons on him.
Oh, God.
And I didn't want him to find out that I was not who I said I was. Right?
Yeah.
And I did everything in my power to manipulate the scenario. To where, like, it made more sense that I was who I was saying I was.
Were you in a public place?
We were.
Were you worried about someone recognizing you?
I was.
Like, that's sort of the Sacha Baron Cohen problem.
Yeah.
Once you get a little big, then you can't do that shit anymore.
I know. I definitely, that ran through my mind. And the good thing was, it's Alaska. We're kind of wearing Alaska gear.
Oh, okay. That
helped. I didn't have a disguise on, but I had hat down low and was like,
so you just, the chances were lower,
mm-hmm.
But could you imagine you're sitting there
and
someone walks over? Oh my God, Payne Lindsay, my favorite true crime podcast.
We talked about like how we get out. Like we had like,
so you obviously thought about it. Yeah. You had a back door or something.
Uh-huh. Or like if somebody, like we bought a drink and they're like, let me see your ID. And they're like, oh, like.
Right.
Lindsay, that's my cousin. It's like, shut up.
Yeah. Oh, God, you got to think about all that stuff.
We thought about everything, and it just worked out. But yeah, I think for me, like, it's calculated risks that I want to take, and I don't feel comfortable doing them. Like, I was really uncomfortable doing that.
Oh, I bet. That's fascinating.
I don't miss it.
Yeah.
I'm glad to be here talking to you today.
You should have the most, like, random out for that. Like, all right, if we're in a restaurant, and all of a sudden someone comes over and recognizes me, immediately we have someone around the corner like in a clown outfit with birthday balloons that come in and just cause like a big scene because it's like they think it's both of your birthdays or something and just have a big mix up and go, I don't know what's going on here, man. This is
so crazy.
This is the weirdest
right?
thing. Let me go sort this out. And then you're just like, out of there.
So you'd be good at this.
Yeah. Well, good at faking a getaway. Sure.
I actually think that Stuff You Should Know is one of the best true crime podcasts out there.
Well,
if we're being real here,
we dabble in that a little bit.
I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
you guys go to places that I don't necessarily go in terms of level of research.
Yeah.
The amount of like context you guys provide on a subject matter, I think that in a low key way,
yeah,
I genuinely mean that.
Yeah. Know? I mean, we mix them in here and there. We have a real like family friendly, kid friendly, you know, show, as you know. We can't go too dark and we can't do too many of them. So, but we've done like, you know, the Vasilla Axe murders and, you know, we've done some dark stuff here and there, but it's usually like a pretty, like super interesting historical story. We don't do a lot of just kind of, you know, your standard, it has to have some weird historical angle almost.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I feel like when we've done true crime.
Yeah. But I like experiencing it that way. I think that's a good way in.
And people like them, and other people, you know, we know from parents sometimes are like, oh, you guys have done too many of those. Like, you know, because we don't do much. We do like every maybe four or five a year.
Uh-huh.
We'll do like a crime story.
Have you heard for 16 years somebody random on the internet say, I missed your old stuff?
I made the mistake of getting on Reddit. I'm not a big Reddit guy.
I saw that you deleted your account, man. What happened?
I did. Well, that was the plan, actually. Was like, I'm going to get on Reddit for 2 weeks and like answer as many questions as I can and clear up as much shit as I can, because I didn't realize it's a thing on Reddit to like speak with great confidence about something that you have no idea about.
Oh, you didn't?
No. And there were a bunch of people. I mean, nice enough people in the Stuff You Should Know Reddit, though, that were like, oh, well, these guys, they haven't liked each other for years and they don't even speak outside of work. And Jerry's quitting any day now. And like all this stuff where I was like, what are you guys talking
You're
about?
Like, stop.
Yeah. So I announced myself. I was like, hey, I'm here. I'll answer questions for like 2 weeks. And I made it like 4 days. And it really like I've left all of social media years ago, except I enjoy Instagram still.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a great mental health move, and Reddit sucked me in so hard. It felt like I used to feel just anxious and like, what are they saying and all this stuff. And so I didn't last long, and I was like, well, this has been fun, everyone. I'm deleting the account and leaving. But I answered a ton of questions, almost like just a drawn out AMA.
So when you decided to detox from social media, what had driven you to that point?
Oh, you know how it goes. Just the way people fight online and give a person a mask and they'll show their true face. Like, just so ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't any good for me. It was taking my life in a bad, unhealthy direction.
Like negativity?
Yeah, just constant negativity and just sucked in too much, you know? Mm-hmm. And especially when you're married and you have a freaking 8-year-old daughter now. Do I really want to spend my time?
Am I up late reading comments?
Yeah. And I wasn't even like doing the arguing and engaging necessarily, but just reading through threads of people arguing politics. And God, it's just, I realized like, this is not getting me anywhere.
Yeah.
It's not making any change. It's like, all it's doing is just upsetting me.
Yeah.
And me taking time away from, you know, it's not like I was like locked up there and my daughter was like, where's daddy?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, he's reading Facebook.
It's just like, hey, he's on Facebook again.
Yeah. Sorry.
He's posting those weird articles. I don't think they're true.
But it was enough to where I was just like, this is no good. So I got out of it. And after I'd made the decision to pull myself out of that, to find myself back in, it was like, ugh, I don't like this. I got to get back out of here.
Yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah. But people are pretty cool. Like, Stuff You Should Know is a really good subreddit.
They
feel
seem like yeah. Again, like I
like
thought
everyone's
that,
pretty
like,
cool.
It was cool to see that.
Yeah, for a little while, I had a show called Movie Crush for a few years.
You're the ultimate film buff, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm into it. And Movie Crush was an interview show, and it I had never done anything like that, and that was a real. You ask about doing, you know, Stuff You Should Know for so long, and how do you keep it sort of fresh? Mm-hmm. Like Movie Crush was a very purposeful move by me to like do my solo record or something, for lack of a better term.
I could tell it was a passion project written all over.
Yeah.
And it was badass in your own Chuck way.
Yeah, it was fun, and I totally enjoyed it, and I miss it a lot as well, but like that allowed me to scratch an itch that to do something like that I had never done, to sit down with someone and interview and have a conversation about a movie, their life, or whatever. And so like I get the urge.
Yeah. So like creatively speaking, what's something like that you'd want to do next? What are those things that are on the horizon for your legacy, I guess, right?
Payne, I've been thinking a lot about this.
I know.
My friend. I would like to make a documentary, I think.
Hell yeah.
I've always loved documentaries. I think it's one of the most doable things. Nothing is easy, but as far as your chances of writing a screenplay and making a movie that gets released, like, that is such a long shot. And that's, you know, I used to want to do that stuff. I still write scripts kind of for fun. But like a documentary feels like very doable. You don't have to have as much money to raise. It's, I actually have connections now through podcasting that, you know, I could probably get it seen by people and maybe on a Netflix or something. Like, that seems like a attainable thing. A documentary is really interesting.
On what subject matter?
I don't know, man.
What are you kicking around in there?
I've had a bunch of ideas from like a documentary on guitar solos. There's never been one, which is amazing to me.
Just on solos in general.
Sort of the history of it, how they've evolved.
Uh-huh.
The top ones ever, interview musicians about their process of like how you write an iconic solo. Like, I just think that would be really cool.
I'm a
guitar player, so like I think that would be a really cool doc.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of the higher profile idea, but I have my like documentary indie guy roots, where I would love to do a documentary on something like the relationship between public libraries and unhoused people, because it's always, ever since the internet went into libraries, there have been unhoused folks going in there to be on the internet. And it's a thing, like going to any public library and there are unhoused people on the public computers.
Right.
Surfing the net, you know, like, so they don't have this stuff. So that's where they go, and they'll sit in there and like do whatever people do online.
Yeah.
And I just think there's it seems like there's a story in there somewhere.
That is pretty cool, especially if you were to like follow some people.
Well, yeah, I think that's the idea. Is
different stories, different lives.
You get to know people
and
you're like, well, this person's interesting.
Because I'd be like, ultimately, I feel like the human story within that is kind of the coolest thing, and you don't even know what that is yet.
Yeah, and
the fun part about a documentary.
The coolest thing about documentary sometimes is when it becomes something that you didn't set out to do. Some of the best ones ever started out as a thing and ended up another thing, whether it was Vernon, Florida, or Sherman's March is like sort of a classic one. These are like really, really old, but they both famously started out with an angle and completely changed course.
Yeah.
Once they got to where they were going, or once the story revealed itself. Have you ever heard or seen Vernon, Florida?
No. What is that?
It was Errol Morris's, I think, second documentary.
One of the goats.
One of the goats, and one of my all-time favorites. But I think the story, I may be getting some of this wrong, but I think the story is that he went down to this place, Vernon, Florida, sort of inland panhandle.
Okay.
In the early, or I guess it was mid-80s, because this town was well known. It was called Stumpville as the nickname, because it was a town that was well known for people cutting off limbs to get insurance payments. But so there were...
What do you mean?
There were more than, I don't know how many people, enough to make it an interesting documentary, of people who would like cut off their hand or something.
Was there not a better way to do this?
Oh, I mean, this is Vernon, Florida in the 80s,
okay,
you know?
Right.
So like
Florida.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's inland panhandle. And he got down there all of a sudden investigating, you know, this insurance thing. And he was basically kind of was going to be run out of town.
Yeah.
You know, guys with, I'm not sure like how threatening it got with like weapons or anything, but they were basically like, you need to get the fuck out of here. Mm-hmm. You don't belong here. You're not telling the story. But when he was down there, he was like, well, let me just pivot and like the people here are the story.
Yeah.
And he just, Vernon, Florida is literally, I think it's probably like maybe 8 or so, 9 people that he just vignettes between, from the town sheriff to like the turkey hunter.
That's incredible.
And these people, he would just sit down and talk to them. And that's a documentary. And they're just like, some of them are batshit crazy. Some of them are interesting and weird. I mean, they're all a little strange.
I feel like if you were to cut off your own limb,
yeah, you go
you
back.
You
kind of
deserve the insurance money.
Well, I mean, they were.
You know what I mean?
It.
It's like, yeah, that's commitment.
I guess they would set it up like an accident or something. Like
I guess like there would be fraud there because they're lying about how it happened.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, shit.
No, like, it's for sure fraud. But
like it's one of those things where if I was like, hey, like how much to cut your leg off?
Yeah.
In real life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. it's fraud plus. I guess because it's not like they're faking like, oh, I didn't really lose my arms tied behind my back.
It's like they get something.
They went right? for it at least. Yeah.
No, I just get a little, get like the minimum, whatever.
Yeah. That would just be some like billionaire's kink. It's like pay people to cut digits off or something.
There's like a movie that's like that, right? Yeah. I think it's really not a good one. But actually, strangely enough, like a couple days ago, I saw on Reddit, like that WTF subreddit, it posts like random pictures. There was, I want to go back and see it now. I think it might have been this. It was like, this guy is cutting off his legs for insurance fraud. It wasn't like a graphic thing.
Oh, okay.
But his legs were in this like cooler and they had this like tourniquets on it. I was like, is this guy really doing that for insurance?
Yeah.
But then like you say this answer. Right now. And I was like, well, shit, I guess there's a whole documentary on that.
Yeah, I imagine it feels like everything's harder to get away with these days than it probably was in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I mean,
even with crime, like, I mean, thank God, but it's hard to get away with a crime now, you know?
Absolutely.
Like back in the old days, you know, that's why they had serial killers back then more, I think, because you could get away with that stuff.
And they were doing it with impunity. They were doing it lazily.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and literally, Jeffrey Dahmer was, like, accidentally doing it. Like, he was so...
Yeah.
He was bad at it, but also got away with it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Like,
well, and I think... Wasn't it Ted Bundy who, like... He had a series of murders. He's remembered for the walking into the sorority in the University of Florida, but like that was the end. He had been doing that for a long, long time and getting away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I think just sort of snapped and like, if I'm remembering right.
Yeah. And then also he escaped from prison. Like,
oh, that's right.
That's like stuff that only El Chapo can do now.
Yeah. Yeah
or like
yeah.
If you escape, they're going to get you.
Yeah.
They somehow always find you.
Yeah, you can't get away with shit anymore, Bane.
You really can't. Really, I miss the good old days.
I know. Well, it's pretty great, too. That's like people who's like, oh, New York, when it was a big shithole. Those were the days.
Good sleep should come naturally. And with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values. Premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
What do you feel about AI?
Oh, boy. All right. Matt's laughing. Here's my deal with AI. I think it has a ton of really great applications, and it's not something like that I'm like super against as a concept, because I do think it has great applications. But the one thing that I haven't heard a lot of people talking about that it would be the big concern for me is as far as replacing humans and their jobs is more like, what if there was advances so quickly 30% of the world's workforce was out of work
right
within like a year span?
Yeah.
And like, that's what worries me is like, not like, the, oh, the, like, I don't have my job
the
anymore.
The nearer
like,
future of it?
Yeah. Sort of like that, that would wreck
repercussions
the world's of, economy.
For sure.
If all of a sudden that many people were all of a sudden out of work. So I don't know. That's the kind of thing I think about is that it's, it won't be like a steady enough progression and build. And it would be like a catastrophic, like over the course of 2 years, like,
yeah,
you know, 40 million people worldwide lost their jobs.
That'd be horrible, right?
Yeah, I think that would be very bad for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And I got some filmmaker friends. I don't know if you've seen the, like the, what's that called, Dylan? The new, like AI video stuff that's crazy? Sora?
Where they're basically making movies.
Yeah.
Shorts or whatever.
It's like, you can't discern it from real or not. It looks better than, like, objectively.
Yeah. Man, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, as sort of artist creators ourselves, it's definitely like, I'm not, like, I'm on the way out, so I'm not worried about myself. and maybe there's a future where they're, I don't think it would replace, like, the film, like, the movies in Hollywood.
Right.
It could live alongside it, though.
Yeah.
And there may be a day where it's like, oh, these are AI movies and these are regular movies.
Like a verified thing almost or something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I kind of feel like it's a, I can almost look at it like the internet, right? Like, let's go like to like 1996 or something.
Right.
If you were like, I'm not doing that whole internet thing.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to eventually, I think.
Everyone's doing it.
Or you're going to go to the library and do it.
Right.
Right. And yeah, so, yeah. You know, I think it's like because of AI and what it is and like how it's been developed in the first place, it isn't going away.
Yeah.
It's more about how it assimilates with our lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, what we choose to do with it and how we perceive that as people in society, I think.
Yeah. I'm not sure about Josh, actually, you know, my co-host Josh Clark.
Yeah.
He did a limited series called The End of the World with Josh Clark, where he went through I can't remember how many, either 8 or 10 what's it called? Existential risks.
Okay.
Potentially, like, you know, world-ending risks.
Yeah.
And he went through each one, whether it was, you know, nuclear war or this or that. And AI was one of them, obviously.
Sure.
So he could speak a lot more to the idea that I don't know a lot about of AI, you know, when it learns, so, you know, becomes sentient or whatever, and sort of at that point where, like, they take over. Mm-hmm. Like Josh could speak like intelligently and about that stuff.
I'm also not as versed, but I got some friends who I'm like, oh yeah, that is crazy. I guess that does make sense. Then I forget exactly how they told me. But,
right.
But it's,
I'm not sure how big of a threat that is.
I don't really know either.
Yeah.
But it sounds a lot like that Will Smith movie or something, you know? It's like, shit.
There's a lot of sci-fi out there that reinforces some,
you know,
fears.
Like, wow. We've our own imaginations have, we're catching up to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even in the UAP space.
What's that?
The UFOs.
Oh, okay.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
Or what does UAP stand for?
Unidentified aerial phenomenon.
Okay. That's sort of the new thing?
That's the new thing that, like, the government kind of labeled it as.
Right.
More official military-sounding term.
No, fine.
Whatever. UFO sounds way cooler. Still
we really need to distance ourselves from UFOs.
Yeah, like, we kind of liked that.
That's a little kooky sounding.
Yeah, it sounds a
UAP,
little like
too more
professional.
Yeah.
We're podcasting here.
You know, Payne, I haven't kept up. I know there's been a lot of stuff in the past couple of years with like a sort of more official government admissions,
mm-hmm.
whether it's like an Air Force pilot who saw something. And, mm-hmm. you know, like, I know there's more stuff officially sort of on record, but I don't know a lot about it. I would not, and maybe, you know, movies have primed us, and maybe that's, you know, one of the conspiracies is that that's why they started making those movies, because the government really knows. And
right.
Let's get all these sci-fi movies out there about aliens. So one day when it all happens, people will be like, oh, sure. I love E.T. and Alf right. or whatever.
Yeah, he's cute.
So maybe that's part of it. But if it came out as like a real thing and they're like, oh, yeah, there's intelligent life out there, and whether they're future humans or just whatever, you know, Zargons, I would buy it, and I wouldn't be like, no, I'm not sure about that. I'd say, oh, okay, sure, I believe that.
Well, where do you stand on it now? Do you believe that there's intelligent life out there?
I mean,
educated guess.
Probably got to be, right?
I feel like there has to be.
It seems like a really, as vast as the universe is, it would be a big...
be an anomaly, right?
An anomaly if Earth was the only place.
Right.
But shit, I don't know. I do like the idea of them being future humans, though. That to me is kind of a cool idea.
Yeah. I still think
they're not aliens, they're just us, you know.
Yeah,
a million
and
years
like maybe
from
that's true. But I feel like that still straddles on the line of that's easier for us to digest. That's looking at it through the lens of like we're Earth.
Right.
We're humans on Earth.
So this is just
it's probably just us in the future. I don't know about aliens and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
It's very earthling of us.
Yeah.
But shit, maybe that's true, right?
Yeah.
I often wonder, you know, I mean, I think that there definitely is intelligent life out there. I think that there's some accounts out there that are so strong and backed that I'm like, okay, well, what else happened then?
Right.
Right? Like, this isn't a crazy person. There's so many witnesses. What happened? But let's just say for a second, playing devil's advocate, that, you know, we are the only intelligent beings in the entire universe, right?
Okay.
Then I think it's a weirder anomaly that we have advanced this far in our own intelligence, in our own imagination, that we've collectively convinced ourselves that this is happening when it isn't.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Like if you were to zoom out and it's just us, we're over here fucking debating it.
Right.
It's like, that would be insane, but also, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think that sounds sillier because I think the science continues to prove how much larger and older the universe is than we ever thought.
Sure.
And I don't think that we're ever going to hit a wall here. I think that we're learning that it's infinitely infinite.
There's no Truman Show.
Right. There's no like
wall that you punch into at the end.
So I don't know. It's fun to talk about. I do see that, you know, I'm not much of a conspiracy theory guy, honestly. Yeah. Like,
same.
You know, they were always fun as a kid, but it's like, you know, they're just more fun than they are realistic. Like, it's not.
I like the fun ones. Like, it's fun to talk about.
Like JFK, do you think that it was... I just think it was...
Oh, I just meant more like Bigfoot.
Oh, Bigfoot. Is that a conspiracy, though?
Well,
do you believe
maybe
in Bigfoot?
Not a conspiracy. No, probably not.
You just want to believe in Bigfoot, because that'd be cool.
Yeah, Bigfoot would be great.
Right? Or maybe there was a Bigfoot, and he just died.
Yeah, that was some, like... or maybe it's just some crossbreed animal that learned how to walk on its legs or something.
And that's the stuff that people say who are like really like enthusiasts. They're like, it's totally possible that I'm like, okay, but like,
right.
You're also simultaneously saying that there is a creature that is the best ultimate hide and seek player ever.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, unless it's interdimensional or something, now we're getting weird.
Yeah.
But you know, people see weird stuff and, you know, a lot of it's unexplained. I've always been a fan of that, but I feel like from a basic standpoint, the UFO stuff is always fun because I feel like, you know, we've only learned that we're incredibly small.
Yeah.
And I do think it'd be a culture shock worldwide if we bursted the bubble and like we had to reframe just where we were.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think a lot of religions based on stuff that happened here on Earth.
Yeah.
And, you know, depending on how you feel about religion or how deep you want to go into that, it's kind of like, well, did we tell ourselves these things to be better people?
Right.
Did someone tell us this stuff?
I mean, is it every religion just like at some point humans made up the gods to explain why it wasn't raining or why, you know, Tuk-Tuk died or whatever? Like, isn't that the birth of all religion?
Really, yeah.
It's sort of like that, you know, there are gods that control all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they fell away, and then the ones that stuck were the big ones, you know?
Like
Christianity and Islam, and, you know, it's like the internet boom. Like, when all those websites happened, you know, there's going to be a handful that stick around.
Yeah, I'm more of a Scientology guy myself. You know, I like to pay for my religion.
I saw a maybe ghost once.
Did you really?
Yeah.
A maybe ghost.
So I'm not generally on record as like being some believer in like that kind of stuff.
Well, I like it more now.
But I saw a maybe ghost once to the point where I was like, all right, well, like, what do I know?
Well, what was it?
It was in college. I told this story on Stuff You Should Know before, but it was in college in Athens in the mid-90s. My friend and I were coming home from being out, and rounded a corner in a neighborhood, and in the approaching four-way stop intersection, I saw it first. There was a and I swear to God, I'm not making this up.
All right,
I'm not some big ghost guy. This happened. But there was a woman standing in the middle of the intersection with that looked like she was 200 years old.
What do you mean? Like she was like physically that old, or from 200 years ago?
No, she looked like just old, the oldest woman you could imagine. Just okay. Looked super, super
that
old.
That sounds terrifying to me. Okay.
Yeah, it's a little horror movie-esque. And I swear I'm not making this up, Payne. Okay. She was wearing a black robe with a purple sash, and she was standing right in the middle of the intersection, and she was, and I'm illustrating for Payne, everyone, I'm standing up. She was standing like this, and she was holding a book in her hand like this. And it looked like a Bible. I don't know, but it was like a big, thick, gold-leafed book.
Okay.
I'm not saying like it was a Bible, but it looked like a Bible. Right. Could have been a fucking dictionary. What do I know?
Yeah.
And we pulled right up on this lady going, we were approaching this four-way stop, so it wasn't like we were going super fast. Probably slowed down to like 10 miles an hour. We turned right in front of her and to the point where we were just a few feet from her. And I looked at her the whole time. She did not blink. She did not move. She didn't do anything. She was completely whole. It wasn't like opaque or see-through at all. And my friend drives like 50 feet and he's, you know, he's screaming at this point. He's like, what the fuck is that, dude? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. And
holy
he stops
shit.
And I turn and look behind us. There's nothing there, of course. And
gone now?
It's completely gone. And to this day, like, he's still one of my best friends. Every now and then,
yeah,
we'll be hanging out and be like, hey, Brett, what was that?
Right.
And he's like, I don't know, man. I have no idea. But we weren't seeing things. We weren't hallucinating. It was a real experience that happened. And there's no explanation to me other than either a ghost or, you know, some like, you know, some crazy old lady, which is probably scarier almost.
So do you
see? It's probably 1 or 2 in the morning, you know?
Yeah. And the fact that your friend saw it too.
Oh, yeah.
You could have easily written it off as like, I don't know. I was tired that night.
I know.
So do you still drop acid or no?
I haven't in a long time. No, this wasn't drug induced. I mean, we had been out.
No, I believe
you. Stuff, but it wasn't, you know, this is not, you don't just see things
you
that aren't
don't.
There.
So when you say that she was like frozen, do you mean like she was standing so still?
So still, like a mannequin.
Or was it almost like an image of it? Like
no, she looked like a real person.
I guess I mean like, okay, if it was a real person, like what's a good example? It's almost like the Matrix, right?
Right.
And you go back like, out of the Matrix and you're like body laying there. It's like not, you're like not in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she's somewhere else, but like there's like a physical thing right here. Was it like, or was, did it seem like she was like present and standing still?
I
can't tell which one's scarier.
You know, that's a good question. Like, did she seem like alive?
Is she like holding her breath, or was it like a shell of a thing? That's why it was
right, like that.
I don't know.
All right.
That makes sense?
I've never thought about that. That's a great question. It looked more like just a person standing really, really still. You know, I'm trying to remember exactly. That's the idea that we got. But also, you know, maybe it was someone that was like the best prank ever. And someone had like a literal sort of Madame Tussauds wax person that looked like completely real and ran out and put her out there. Like, who knows? It might have been, I don't know.
Right.
Like I told you after I looked into it, like this is,
if that's the alternative, that's scary.
Yeah, this was like kind of right before the internet. And so there was no way to look that stuff up. But a few years ago I went and I found the intersection in Athens, because I wasn't, you know, couldn't remember the street names or whatever. And I did as good a research as I could as far as like if anyone died there or like tried to find stuff out, and I kind of came up empty.
So how do you, I mean, obviously it happened and your friend was there. It's one of those things. It's probably like an inside joke now. Like, what was that? Like, we'll never know.
Yeah.
But like, how do you view that? Like, that was weird.
Yeah.
You can rationally explain it away.
Right.
But like, if it wasn't the wax doll, which is weird.
That's weird too. There is no non-weird explanation.
Right. Which is why I like this story.
Yeah.
It's like, then what was it then? Like, how do you explain that in the way
that... I don't know, man. I mean,
your belief system, where does that fit?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's kind of the question. I think it wasn't like after that I was like, well, my God, from now on,
right?
I'm a ghost guy. But it's not that.
You missed a big miss.
But I buy it, though. Like, if someone like I said, I really believe, like I saw a ghost one time, I'd be like, yeah, sure. I might have too. I get it.
Yeah. So you, yeah, you kind of like, I'm open to, like, I haven't been able to explain that yet. So.
Yeah. And we just did this kind of ties in with that, with the alien abduction thing. Mm-hmm. We did an episode recently on alien abductions.
Oh, nice. Did you cover any particular stories?
I mean, a couple of the more famous ones, the couple who was one of the big
Betty
first
and Barney
one.
Hill?
Yeah, yeah, the Hills.
Pretty crazy one.
Yeah, and you know, what we found, and you probably know this stuff, mm-hmm. Through the research, is that like almost everyone that claims a story like that is like a very sort of normal, reasonable, educated, like, yeah. They're not the kind of people who would just make something up. Like, they all aren't people that would make something up like that.
Yeah. And it's like,
and there's something to that.
Yeah. And like, I went in depth in that particular story, and my conclusion was that regardless of whether or not it happened the way that they're saying it did.
Yeah.
It's also still an unexplained phenomenon that whatever happened to them.
Right. Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
Like, you could say that it's some psychological thing or whatever.
Uh huh.
But okay, well, what's that called?
Yeah. So that,
what is that again? Then, why did they both experience it at the same time?
Like a shared delusion or something.
Right. Why are there physical, like, I don't know, like,
yeah, I think there were some physical
burns and stuff.
Yeah, you know,
what's up with that? Like, something happened.
Totally. The Hills were interesting in that they were a great example of someone who had every reason not to. Like, they were an interracial couple who, like, did civil rights work. And like, all of that would just hurt their ability to do that kind of stuff and be taken seriously.
It helps nothing. You would actually not do that. And that, yeah. And they were resistant in doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
they didn't come forward for a little while.
That,
yeah.
Right.
So they're like, I mean, that means something, you know?
Yeah. It's crazy. Who knows? But it's, I think some of these older stories are the best.
Yeah.
Just because of the nostalgia of it. And it's like, you know.
Well, that was kind of the heyday. I don't feel like that stuff happens anymore.
And like, you're right, which like, you, how do we reason with that? And
I don't
like,
know. Maybe that's when they were coming here.
Right.
You know,
I also think that if we're going to go down that road of, okay, if they're coming from a place that we can't see and we don't even know definitively if they're real or not.
Right.
Clearly they are more superior in intelligence than we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they would likely know in our own evolution in technology on our Earth.
Right.
That now's the time where we all got phones.
Right.
They would not know that.
Like, yeah.
Not that that's their fear or something, but, you know, maybe,
yeah.
You know.
Or there are things that we can do that they can't.
Right.
And that's what some of the medical exams and stuff, like, it seems like a lot of them have to do with pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
The Hill woman was definitely like, you know, she felt like she was being checked to see if she was pregnant. And mm-hmm. I feel like that's always a thing. So there may be something to that. Like, they can't reproduce like we do, or.
Right.
I don't know.
And that, I think they also like buttholes. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, like it's, the, I don't know. Like, we also, on Earth, we do too. So it's not like.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
Well, not, I mean, everybody, but like,
there's,
you know,
only so many ways in there.
Maybe,
you know?
They don't even have one. Like, you know, I don't know. Like,
but you never hear about, like, oh, they went in through my nose and.
No, it's never
always,
like,
it's always the butthole.
Ear hole.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe they don't get how, I don't know. Maybe that's their kink. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, sure.
But like, I like the older stuff because there's examples like a Kodak picture. Like today, now so more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
Is it real?
Right.
And we're going to get to the point where like a UFO video doesn't really matter anymore.
Yeah, with AI and deepfake, it's like that shit is scary, man.
That sucks. And I hate that that's a realm that we're entering just for, you know, like having to distinguish what's real and not.
Yeah.
But like, if you go back far enough, there's like Kodak prints.
Yeah, like real film of
that
stuff.
Yeah. That aren't CGI that they can verify, mm-hmm. that is an anomaly in this photo.
Yeah.
And those to me are the, like,
that's
hold the most weight now, like,
cool.
All these years later, which is kind of bizarre.
Yeah. We saw an orb in a picture of ours once when my wife's grandfather had died and we had just moved into a new house and built it myself, our privacy fence so we could let our dogs out in the yard. And the very first day we let them out in the yard, we got pictures of them running around. And her granddad really loved dogs and our dogs. And there were like, there was a distinct orb right there with the dogs playing. And she was like, that's Charlie. And I was like, All right.
You're like, sure. You're like, it definitely is.
Yeah.
But what, fine. Watch it be, right? Right. It's like,
yeah. But I love those, all the old school pictures of,
oh, yeah.
I remember there was one where it was a guy standing in a graveyard, like an Old West guy.
Yeah.
You remember that one?
I do.
Where it wasn't like a hazy apparition. It was like,
it's like that's a dude.
Yeah. Like what I saw.
That's terrifying. Yeah. You're right.
Could, I mean, it's probably just some faked thing, you know?
Yeah.
But it was creepy as hell.
Yeah.
It was one of the good ones.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep experts. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Are you, like, have you done stand-up yet?
No.
Are you ever going to do it?
I don't think so, man.
Why not? Just do like a little, like 20, like you said, 20 people, private event.
If it was Stuff You Should Know, listeners, I might do it.
Like, I'm asking because I want to do it. And I've been like, just for myself.
Yeah,
just
for
like, you know, and I'm
challenge.
Preparing to bomb,
uh-huh.
But like I'd like the exercise and it'd be
it'd be
fun and it'd be like,
I'm kind of the same way, man. That's why I would do it, to really like flex a muscle that I've never flexed.
Yeah.
To get over a fear, to conquer something that I love.
I got an idea then, because I've been thinking about it. Like it'd probably be either later this year or I don't know, whenever I feel like, okay, it's time to do like a
non-comedian the podcasting set.
I'll do like a private thing where it's like, you know, people that we know, and like, okay, like come do like a 2 minute thing,
right?
I don't know, or like, you know, that'd be like the non-comedian, not funny people trying to be funny,
right? We can get Ira Glass in there. That'll be great.
You got all the OG plugs, right?
I used to do good Ira. I tried to bust it out just now, but it wasn't coming.
Well, you're gonna do an Ira Glass joke?
No, I was going to do an Ira Glass impression of Ira Glass doing comedy.
Oh, God.
But I got scared at the last second.
No,
I haven't done Ira in a long time.
You got it.
He left a message on my cell phone one time. He got my number, you know, like I'd met the guy like once or twice. But it was when that whole podcast, remember the guy that tried to get money saying he invented podcasting years ago? This was probably before you even...
Like the name and stuff or something?
Not even the name, just the whole concept. I think he was mailing out tape.
That is not a podcast.
Well, he said
that's
it was
Netflix
at the time.
First generation.
Like, it was a podcast in a way, but he was distributing them on cassette, which is hysterical. But anyway, the patent troll, that's what they call them.
Okay.
He said he had a patent on podcasting. He was trying to basically fucking extort a bunch of podcasts for money. And so a bunch of people, it was a big deal at the time, were talking and... And luckily, we had a company, I think it was when we were with Discovery Channel, but they sort of, you know, have a legal team that handled all that. But I had all of a sudden some people that I've never spoken to calling me, like Mark Maron called me, and I was like, how are these people getting my number, first of all?
Seriously, right?
And Ira left a message for me one time. He said, Chuck, this is Ira Glass. I wanted to see if you could talk about this patent troll for a little bit. Just give me a call. Here's my number. And just give me a call, and we'll talk about it.
You're pretty good.
And I worked it up. I saved that message for so long, and I don't have it anymore. But I would play it.
You don't need it.
And I would be like, Ira Glass left me a message.
Like I was like, dude, that's 7 years old. You're like,
the
I know.
True
like,
pod.
He did call me once.
Yeah, totally.
I know him.
Yeah, it was pretty funny, Ira.
Do you do impressions?
I do fun impressions like that for fun. I've done a lot of them on Stuff You Should Know. Did them all my life growing up. My deal with impressions is they're not great, but I get into it enough to where like people enjoy them.
Okay, so
it's not like Kevin Pollak with like, oh my God, you sound.
It's like I can't. Yeah,
or
like
the what's his name from SNL that just nails Trump so hard.
Yeah, or that guy who's like on the red carpet now who does like an amazing.
Yeah, or
Trump
or
and everybody.
You know, like all the Ross Marquand. Like, there's so many like ones that do these perfect.
They're
things.
Like mime impressionists. Yeah, they're like legitimate. Like,
no, mine aren't like that. Mine are just a little more like at a party and we're hanging out, and we're laughing and it's fun and like a. I bust out Sammy Davis Jr. or Ira Glass or somebody.
Okay, so
it's the spirit of the person.
If you're at a party,
and
you're with Ira Glass and you've had like several drinks, he's like, you know that Payne Lindsay guy, right?
Like,
do your best impression of that guy.
Oh, I couldn't do you.
Yeah, you could.
I don't think so. I mean, there has to be like a real distinctive, like, you know, Ira Glass talks like this. And, you know, Sammy Davis Jr., babe, talk like that. Like, it's got to be sort of a out there voice for me to try and tackle it.
Okay.
Your voice is too regular. And that's a compliment. You know, that's mine is too. That's why we're podcasters. Like,
okay, I'll do you then.
Can you? All right.
I don't know. It's going to be like me being
weird.
You got
to take your front tooth out first.
Yeah. You ain't got anything for this? Yeah. What if I just pulled that out?
Dude, that would be the best. We'd have the ultimate podcaster selfie.
We'd have the ultimate podcaster selfie.
Payne and Chuck, no front teeth.
Payne and Chuck, no front teeth.
Oh, okay. Nice. All right. Hey, that's not bad.
Right? Okay. Mm-hmm.
I have a very non-distinct voice, I think. Were you one of those people that didn't like your voice when you started listening to it?
Like, it's such a trope at this point. It's like, I don't like my voice.
Yeah.
I genuinely did not like my voice. And
I think there's a scientific phenomenon behind it.
Because you sound
I can't remember
to
what
yourself.
It is. Yeah.
That's, like, you know, you get used to hearing yourself after making podcasts for so long. But like, I remember feeling so like on the fence about it, on top of being like, I'm not a radio guy. I got my friend Rob to read these bits in Up and Vanished. And the original, like outside of me, like, you know, appreciating his talent and adding another creative piece to the show and like wanting to share that, I was like also like internally like offsetting how much I have to say something.
Right. Oh, interesting.
I feel like I'm not going to do the best job of unpacking this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
I've gotten used to hearing my voice. I wasn't one of those who was like, oh God, I hate my voice.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, well, is that what I sound like? Okay.
Yeah. It's like on my 1,000th ad, I was like, well, I got to get over this now.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to sound dumb, and that just is what it is. And now I just, like, don't care anymore. It's like, all right.
Well, once people listen and you have support and, like, listeners, you're like, all right, I guess if they don't care, then if it's fine with them, then it's fine with me.
And then when you hear a bad voice, you're like, well.
Yeah.
Could be worse.
I guess you got a face for radio. You could also have a voice for TV.
If you, like, when you do your documentary, are you going to Errol Morris it and like kind of be in there? Like, and maybe like, behind the scenes, breaking the wall?
That's a good question. Because he invented
maybe you're talking to people, I don't know.
He invented the machine, the Interatron, which was brilliant.
What's the Interatron?
The Interatron was his invention, which is, you know, if you'll notice, every Errol Morris documentary, I think after Vernon, Florida, that was a little more traditional. He's like off camera talking. Is the people are looking into camera, right into the lens, and talking to Errol Morris, thus the viewer.
Yes.
And so he invented this machine, basically, where it's a, I'm getting this right, Matt, I think it's a screen in front of the lens.
Almost like a teleprompter kind
of? That projects his face, but, like a what's it called when you're reading, is that what you said, teleprompter?
Yeah.
Yeah, like that, basically. So they're looking at his face.
That's so cool.
But the lens is behind his face.
Because how else do you genuinely, authentically get that?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think you can. You can't really.
Yeah.
And that's one reason, honestly, that I wasn't wild about cameras for this. Is like, I think people just, you know, people act differently when there's a camera on them. People change how they act, even if they don't think they do.
Well, I mean, I think that's interesting that you say that. I feel the same way on... I think that the reason why I chose to to film this in the first place.
Uh-huh.
I feel like because of where we're at in podcasting and there's so much content out there,
yeah,
everything's a Zoom call. Everything is just like not real. Every interview I've had ever done in person has always been something that I walked away from that I felt like was a real experience.
Yeah.
And it's like you doing your show in front of somebody with the squad there. It's different than doing it remotely.
Totally.
Even if you're great at doing it remotely.
Yeah, no, you're right.
It's a special thing now. And like, you're different. And like,
no, I'm glad to come in here in person.
Like, also, I appreciate you coming here because I know like, you know, you're a busy guy and like, you know.
I'm really not that busy. Don't tell anybody. Being in person makes a big difference. And when I did Movie Crush at first, every single person was in person at Pond City Market. I would get actors that come through town. I would try and hustle.
So great.
Like, you know, celebrities or whatever to come in there.
You got some good ass guests.
I mean, I managed to for a little while. That was one of the reasons I quit because that was so hard. But then once I wrapped my head around video after COVID and everyone was kind of doing it, the Zoom interviews, I was like, all right, well, this is fine. Yeah. But it's still not the same as being in a room with someone. Energy's different. It's, you know, I was happy to come in here like, I prefer this, you know.
Yeah, you're like, I have to put pants on today. You're like,
I did.
I did too.
Shower.
We both did.
Yeah.
You know, I had to, you know, I had to shower for you too.
Yeah, I've been trying to do that more.
Shower?
No, just like get up, shower, and dress as if you were to go to an office.
Oh, you just, okay.
Just to go upstairs.
Thing, right?
Yeah, I've heard that that's a good trick when you're working from home.
I've done that on my own, like subconsciously over the years, like almost kind of like feeling like ready.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if someone's like, oh, like I could go there right now.
Sure, sure.
I'm choosing not to.
Yeah, like I'm not in my underwear. And,
yeah, it's like I could go, but I, you know, I'm also could just go unwind.
Yeah, it's a semi-recent thing though. But my daughter is funny because she's like, Dad, why are you dressing up? Why are you dressed up?
That is funny.
I'm like, I'm not. I'm wearing like a shirt and pants.
Like, Daddy,
and
just, so you decided to wear pants this
that
year.
That looks different than like flip flops and my basketball shorts or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Wear your cargo pants.
Yeah, exactly.
Never wear out.
Totally.
Well, this has been a blast, man. I was literally telling, you know, the team how much of an OG you are. And you sincerely are one of the pioneers of this space. I want to give you your flowers right here.
Hey, man.
And I appreciate it because
while I'm still alive.
Hey, like because of what you've done and what you did in a time that was way weirder and unknown, you know, I have a career and a path in this space too.
That's the weirdest thing for me is to hear stuff like that.
And that's super cool. And I want to thank you for that.
So thanks,
I appreciate
it. Well, you're great. And I appreciate you having me and like, congratulations on all your success.
Thank you.
I think it's been so cool to see. And I appreciate you having me. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, bro.
Talking to Death is a production of Tenderfoot TV and iHeart Podcast, created and hosted by Payne Lindsay. For Tenderfoot TV, executive producers are Payne Lindsay and Donald Albright. Co-executive producer is Mike Rooney. For iHeart Podcast, executive producers are Matt Frederick and Alex Williams, with original music by Makeup and Vanity Set. Additional production by Mike Rooney, Dylan Harrington, Sean Nerney, Dayton Cole, and Gustav Wild for Cohedo. Production support by Tracy Kaplan, Mara Davis, and Trevor Young. Mixing and mastering by Cooper Skinner and Dayton Cole. Our cover art was created by Rob Sheridan. Check out our website, talkingtodeathpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Talking to Death. This series is released weekly, absolutely free. But if you want ad-free listening and exclusive bonuses, you can subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to tenderfootplus.com.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Welcome back. What if we told you about a major breakthrough on awesome savings on all-inclusive beach vacays?
OMG, this could break the case.
Case? I'm talking about CheapCaribbean.com.
Ooh, is it full of chilling intrigue?
No, it's full of hot savings. CheapCaribbean.com's semi-annual sale is helping you save $200 off your next booking for 4 nights or more. Score site-wide deals to your favorite beaches in Cancun, Aruba, Jamaica, and more now through the end of April.
We gotta take this show on the road.
Let's start at CheapCaribbean.com.